If you used to be a goth teenager like me, you're probably very familiar with Joy Division, specifically Ian Curtis of Joy Division, because eventually they became a new band. Now, they weren't active for a long time, but having said that, in that brief existence of Joy Division, you know, they made some bangers. It was enough for people like me, at least how it used to be. Actually, yeah, still like me. People like me used to love Joy Division, okay? And the funny part is, they were way before my time. You know, you can like a band, even if you weren't around to see them when they first started, you know? Like, obviously I wasn't even alive for most of their shows. Having said that, they were still bangers, you know? I did want to talk about Joy Division because, to be honest, I like talking about bands that really influenced my life. Joy Division is definitely up there, okay? They deserve their own episode, and this is it. Anyway. Before I say or do anything on this podcast related to Joy Division, let me first say that, one, I'm a massive fan of Joy Division. They influenced my life greater than anyone could ever say. But before I talk about Joy Division, let me just rant a bit about one specific thing. It's going to affect me and none of you. Wow, that was hard to say. Full disclosure, I am not going to mention the name of the company. However, a company has sent me a letter in the mail. I got a letter in the fucking mail, and it grinded my gears to a nice little pulp. This is now the second letter I've gotten with a little more money as a request to get my name off of a lawsuit from a job I used to have. No amount of money is going to get my name off that damn lawsuit. I hope you burn. The company I used to work for is worth millions, maybe billions. I don't know. I haven't looked it up. Let's just say that $75 is a goddamn insult. And the first one was even worse, okay? If they started with $75 and made their way up, then I might have been a bit more lenient. They started with $20. This is a multi-million dollar company. Neener. Anyway, let's talk about Joy Division. I was going to rant a bit more, but honestly, you guys don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. It doesn't matter. Anyway, let's talk about Joy Division. Why? Because I love them, okay? Ian Curtis was such an amazing person and very misunderstood. There's a lot of stuff that I want to talk about, specifically the fact that Joy Division was, well, I think they still are. They're around under a new name. It's a tragic story, granted. There's suicide is mentioned. I don't know if people are sensitive to that. If you're listening, you're sensitive to that, you might want to skip this one. I fully understand. Let's go back to 1976 Manchester. If you guys don't know what's going on, let me enlighten you. I have talked before about my interest in rock bands, punk rock, post-punk, a variety of stuff, right? Metal, Viking metal, pirate metal. Look, I like a lot of subgenres, okay? And within all of those subgenres, there's actually quite a bit of history. Specifically, we are talking about post-punk. If you would like to, you know, get the genre correct. However, post-punk was inspired directly by punk. And I mean original punk. Because if it was not for the Sex Pistols, Joy Division would not have formed. They said so themselves. Their words, not mine. The reason being is because, well, they all met at the show. And it's kind of, I don't know, it's a very condensed story. You see, the thing is, Joy Division existed for 5 years, and in those 5 years, they touched a lot of people's hearts. And we're going to the beginning. The beginning. I don't know why I couldn't say that right. Joy Division, of course, existing in this small 5 year, or almost 5 year, existence. Sadly, the members were all working class Joes. They did not experience the fruits of their labors right away, right? They were getting popularity. They were getting really, really famous really fast. And people love them to this day. A lot of people still listen to Love Will Tear Us Apart, one of their absolute gems, one of their most favorite of all time songs. It's one of my personal favorites, and it's one I could sing verbatim. Kind of, never mind. Love will tear us apart again. That is, It's a beautiful song. Listen to it. Love Will Tear Us Apart by Joy Division. If you've never heard them before, first off, I'd love to welcome you to the world of Joy Division. And please enjoy their many albums. Seriously, they're all pretty damn good. I'm not going to lie. Anyways, Joy Division was playing, making albums, and existing in general. The bandmates were living on around $70 a week. Not much, but this was, you know, the 70s. 70s, was it? Yeah. Ian Curtis himself was only 19 when he joined the band. So, what you must understand, too, is that Ian Curtis didn't really... Well, he didn't, he wasn't old, okay? But the thing is, he made a lot of mature decisions. Being the age that he was, they were younger. He was already married at 19, and he had a mortgage, okay? A full-on mortgage. Like, you know what I was doing at 19? I was going to community college doing some dumb shit. Ian didn't do that. He instead grew up pretty fast, actually. Ian Curtis, of course, was, you know, he was employed, because how else would you get married and buy a house, right? And a mortgage of all that. He was working a government job. I'm not too sure which job it was. It was too specified. However, his wife was also employed, and both of them hated their jobs. But of course, Ian, being the young man that he was, he had dreams of being a musician. And at the time, a lot of the inspiration was David Bowie and, you know, bands of the sort. David Bowie inspired so many damn musicians. It's actually wild. I feel bad that I'm saying this now. I only recently got into David Bowie. And there's a whole fucking can of worms there. I'm not going to lie. Me, it's a personal history of mine, but it's one that I won't talk about because it's... Don't worry about it. The thing about Ian is that he already had a lot of problems growing up, sadly. Mainly, he was dealing with depression. And as most teenagers do, right? A lot of teenagers eventually go through a depressive episode. Or they have a lot of emotions that they're dealing with. The thing is, he was also on several medications, which at the time, at 16, he had to get a stomach pumped because he took a variety of drugs, overdosed, essentially, in an attempted suicide. So already there's that seed that has been planted in his head that, you know, he's capable of taking his own life. However, at the time, Ian also began noticing a lot of the punk rock scene in Manchester. And this really did inspire him, you know. This really did show him that the world that you are from is changing. The life that you have could be fundamentally different. You could go and sulk, you could be sad, or you could pick up an instrument and express yourself. And that's exactly what Ian was attempting to do. He saw that as an opportunity. He saw it as a glimmer of hope, inspired by David Bowie and the Velvet Underground. There was other bands too. There was a bunch of them, you know. When it comes to inspiration, there's never just one source. There's always quite a few. But the ones mostly named are David Bowie and the Velvet Underground. Velvet Underground is amazing, by the way. Oh my god, there's another rabbit hole there as well. There was a song that I was looking for years, and it was apparently written by the Velvet Underground. I just was not aware of that connection. And the thing is, this song took 3 years to find for me, and I don't even remember where I heard it from. For the longest time, I thought it was a song made in the dream. Anyway, we already discussed that previous episodes. We already got over it. The song is These Days. That's the song. Anyway, it was around this time that Ian Curtis was finally introduced to our buddy Bernard Sumner, who is the guitarist for Joy Division. And he also had friends as well, so they all introduced each other. You know, Manchester is not too big. You know, you meet someone, they got a buddy, you're all now buddies too. There you go. Manchester comes up a lot because it's quite important to the development of Ian Curtis. It's kind of sad seeing that a lot of the music inspiration from Manchester. There was a person who described it, saying Joy Division sounded like Manchester, cold, direct. You know, very. Very, very British. I mentioned they were friends. When I meant they were friends, I meant Bernard Sumner and Peter Hook were both friends. And they met Ian at this point. How did they meet, though? Well, the way they met is... Remember, I was telling earlier how punk inspired them to meet up with each other. Well, the Sex Pistols were playing a show in Manchester. And that's where they met. And I don't know, man. Sometimes the stars just align perfectly, because the Sex Pistols, I was also going to talk about them. In fact, I think I did a previous podcast about them. There was a documentary that came out called Pistols. I only remember it because at the time, me and my girlfriend were still not dating yet, and I had told her about the show, and I was excited about it, right? I'm like, oh, I love this kind of history, these little documentary stuff, and she's not that into it, but you know what? That's fine. At least right there and then, off the bat, she realized I was weird, and she still loves me, and now it's 2 years later, we're still together. I love it. I love it. Origin stories are amazing. You know, my shoulder hurts. I just started going to the gym again. I'm getting fat, okay? I need to fucking lose weight. Oh, yeah, at the show, at the Sex Pistols show, when Bernard Sumner and Peter Hook met, the drummer for Joy Division was there as well. The drummer, Terry Mason. It's kind of funny, too. They actually met before. Terry Mason met Peter Hook, met Bernard Sumner. They all met, and then they were like, all right, we're going to form a band. All we need is a singer. And then in comes Ian Curtis. But the thing is, what's funny about it is back then they had this whole thing where they're like, all right, we got to form a band, eh? And we got to hire a singer. All right, let's do an audition. And then you audition. Why the fuck did I do a British accent? I'm sorry. I'm not good at those. Also, I don't think anyone who's not British is good at those either. Or English. I don't know the proper terminology. I'm an idiot from California. Do you understand? I live surrounded by soil, by dirt. I want to show people that, okay? I showed it to James? No, James already saw it. I showed it to Joseph Fischer. Doomer Cringe on TikTok. I showed it to him, and it was just so funny. It's like a literal desert. There's nothing here. There's nothing. Kind of like Manchester. Anyway, Ian actually stood out quite a bit, because in the punk rock scene, while he was watching the show, he had a jacket on that he wrote the word hate on the back of. It's actually nice. It's actually a nice photo. You don't see it a lot these days, you know? Like, people brandishing clothing that they themselves made. Everything is bought now. Everything is bought and sold. No one hand stitches shit like they used to do. There's also these, like, metal jackets with the sleeves cut off and they have a bunch of patchworks. Those were fucking cool. Let's bring those back, okay? And I'm talking, Ian Curtis wrote it down on the back of his coat, and he was wearing that to the show. And so you just see this guy in front of you, he's got the word hate written on his back. That's fucking sick. That's punk. Punk as fuck. Interestingly enough, okay, here's what we got. We got the group, we don't have a name yet. And that name was, drumroll please, Warsaw. They were first called Warsaw. Not Warsaw Pact, Warsaw. I'm glad they changed the name. Because Warsaw Pact is its own band. They got way famous. The funny part is, that's kind of the reason they changed the name. They're like, yeah, let's call ourselves Warsaw. Awesome. Hey, this other band, they're way bigger. They made a Warsaw Pact, apparently. Yeah. So, let's change it to something else. And of course, everyone knows people overseas. I'm talking as an American in this specific scenario. As an American, I can tell you right now, we are not as well read and versed and educated. So immediately they thought, okay, let's change it to this. And they picked the word Joy Division because it actually had to do with a division of Nazi concentration camps where the Nazi officials would take advantage of the female prisoners. That's pretty grim. And quite frankly, if you hear the music, it does fit the theme, okay? I'm not saying it's Nazi-based. Don't get that fucking twisted. That's a thing in the music industry, and I want to get that the fuck out of there. Seriously. I'm talking about the grimness, the sad, the sorrowful sound that Joy Division had that I quite frankly love, you know? There's a few songs Joy Division has where you can kind of dance to it and also cry. I personally, at one point, it was foggy and I was at a fucking graveyard. And yes, this is me being totally legit. It was foggy at a graveyard at night. All I had was the headlights on my car and I was dancing to Joy Division's fucking Love Will Tear Us Apart. You ever just... You ever just look back at shit you do and think, my life is a movie, but it's one of those movies from Walmart that's a dollar at the fucking, you know, it's a VHS tape in a DVD world. The fuck does that mean? Anyway, under this new name, Joy Division decided, hey, let's go with the theme, and immediately released a new album. The only problem with this album is that they started realizing, hey, maybe we're leaning a little too heavy in the Nazi sympathy thing, because the album cover is a German boy beating on a war drum. So, and here's the funny thing about it, right? Joy Division at this point had not found their iconic sound, their iconic, you know, like, boisterous dungeon underground sound. In fact, everyone regards the very first album Joy Division created as an outlier. If you listen to it, it's strange. I mean, it's a punk album. It's a punk album through and through, but it doesn't sound like Joy Division. It sounds like a different band. You can actually find the first album on YouTube. It's called An Ideal for Living. You'll see exactly what I mean when I say they leaned heavily into the Nazi imagery. There's no swastikas, granted, but the thing is, it did kind of backfire. The thing is, it was considered mediocre. But then again, every band has to start somewhere, right? So the issue here is that, again, first off, their name is based on the branch of the Nazis. And the second one is, you know, the imagery again. So they thought, okay, let's lean away from that, okay? They were worried that they were going to look like Nazi sympathizers. And quite honestly, you know, two for two right there. So yeah, they had no choice but to, you know, aim in a different direction. And keep in mind, this was only a few years after the Nazi Party did what they did in during World War II. So, like, I'd say like 30 years after. I'm getting my timelines mixed up. Yeah, I think it was 30 years. Okay, having listened to the song just now, like, I actually paused the recording to go listen to it to be sure, like, to see what the fuck's going on. It wasn't bad. Like, what the fuck? Seriously, right? Like, I'm hearing it and I'm thinking, if Joy Division had gone this direction, I think they would be up there with, like, the Sex Pistols in terms of genre, which is very fitting because that's who they were inspired by. It is very clearly inspired by the Sex Pistols. I don't hate the album. It doesn't sound like Joy Division, but I like it. You know? It's a really good introduction. It's just not what they were going for sound-wise, but, you know, it is what it is. It's not a bad album. Man, I don't know why. That would have been cool to see, you know? Having said everything I just said about the album and the mixed reviews and the Nazi fucking, the Nazi controversy. Yeah, there was a controversy behind it. I originally said it like, oh, you know, they might see us like this, but no. There was a controversy behind it. So they, you know, they decided to switch up. However, the factory, recording studio, picked them up. They heard that and they thought, yeah, you know what? There's something there. It was their, it was someone named Rob Gretton who became their manager. That person was also the one who had ties with Factory Records. And this record studio at this point had already, like, established other punk bands. So they heard Joy Division and they picked them up. The thing is, Joy Division did not know how big these guys were, right? At the time, they were like, yeah, sure, we'll sign up. But they weren't aware how massive they were about to be, because this recording studio, they had a lot of people with them that not only knew how to book shows, but how to, you know, rile up the crowd. And they were really good at that. So, you know, Joy Division got a really good hand in life right there. That would be like if you have a local band release a single album and immediately, like, the biggest record company you could think of just picked them up. That's fucking sick. I like that. That's how talented Joy Division was. The sad part is, with more eyes on the band, there was a lot more stress to be had. Keep in mind, Joy Division was a small-time band playing very underground gigs, and now they were about to be mainstream. Ian Curtis's health at this point, with more and more eyes on them, began to decline, sadly. This was a man who had, you know, always dealt with depression, you know, in the past. And now, with all of the eyes on him and all the lights on the stages and everything going on, he now suffered from severe epilepsy. All the medication that he was taking was, you know, it was very numerous. And at the worst point, Ian Curtis was having 2 seizures a week. That is a lot. That's a concerning amount of seizures. It was actually only in 1978 that he had his first seizure. So, you know, along with the fame came all the stress that most likely caused all these seizures. As mentioned previously, Joy Division was about to explode. However, there's always a defining moment in a band's life where you can clearly see the jump from underground to mainstream. That jump for Joy Division was actually Stuff the Superstars at Funhouse at the Mayflower. Saturday, the 28th of July. Let's see, what year was that? I don't remember the year, but that was the show widely remembered as Joy Division's final underground performance before they finally blew up and became, you know, world famous. And of course, that didn't happen overnight. There's always someone who helps with an album, someone who records an album and can edit it in the perfect way. And that producer was Martin Hannett. This is the same guy that worked with U2 and made them, like, world famous. They made their first album and it was, like, super platinum or something. Look, I don't know a lot about U2, I'm not gonna lie. U2 is one of those bands where, like, yeah, they're big, they're famous, but, like, I actually had the association with them where every time you bought an Apple product, or in the early days of Apple, it would just be jam-packed with U2 albums. Like, you know, like, it's very corporate. Very corporate. They were also one of the first bands that played at the, at that Superdome, whatever the fuck it's called, the Las Vegas Sphere. There we go. Anyway, they I got off track. I tend to do that. Oh, man. This is the album that fucking kicked off Joy Division hard. Anyone who knows Joy Division and who slightly remembers anything about Joy Division or was a fan in any way, shape, or form, anyone who could say, yeah, I'm a fan of Joy Division, everyone knows the album Unknown Pleasures, with that iconic fucking image on the album. You've seen it on Tumblr, you've seen it on Goth Girls' fucking t-shirts. It's iconic, it's a classic. But what the hell is it? The album cover is a unique image. So it's a weird description. I gotta bring it up here. Let me pull up this paper. The image art is actually the radio frequency of a pulsar or a rotating neutron star. By the way, let me tell you something about this album. It is still regarded as one of the best albums in the last decade. That's pretty good. That's pretty damn good. You know? Here's how good it is, okay? I really like that this journalist said, I don't remember who it was exactly, but they say it's genius is that years later, you know, at the time of release, Joy Division's album Unknown Pleasures sounded like the future. And even years later, it still sounds like the future. You know what I mean? It's just that good. It's that iconic. I was reading something here. I want to make sure that's legit. Okay, if this is legit, that is fucking nuts. They wrote and performed Unknown Pleasures in 3 days? 3 days. That's fucking quick for an album, dude. The beauty behind the album is that Joy Division had now found their sound. And the tragedy of this album is that Ian Curtis, still suffering from all of those conditions that he had, from his epilepsy, from his depression, you can hear it in the album. In fact, it's one of those albums where I would say the artist, whenever the artist suffers, they could put it in their art. And absolutely, that's what's going on in Unknown Pleasures. If you listen closely, it's just, you feel Ian Curtis, you know what I mean? You just, I don't know, there's something poetic about it. Absolutely beautiful, beautiful fucking album. So you have this album that made them go golden superstar. You know, the very, very high and up there. At this point, Ian Curtis is not doing too well. The stress of touring, the lighting on the stages and everything, his health began to deteriorate rapidly. In fact, they had another album called Closer. This was their final album. It was home to one of the most beautiful fucking songs out of every single Joy Division song that was out there. Love Will Tear Us Apart was featured on that album. And let me tell you something before I talk about that. One of the stages that they performed at before they recorded this album, The technicians made a mistake and they accidentally turned on the strobe lights, and right then and there, Ian Curtis had a seizure on stage. So it had gotten that bad where his eyes were very sensitive and the stress of it all was just getting to him. By the time we recorded this album, Closer, Love Will Tear Us Apart was written about his wife separating him. Because the truth is, Ian Curtis wasn't the most loyal to his wife. He never cheated physically, but he started talking to another woman, and this is where things sadly took an abrupt end. On top of all of the stress, on top of him supposedly, well, not supposedly, definitely happened, cheating on his wife. Again, not physically though, but a number of love letters were found. It was never physical, it was just emotional. Having said that, that is, you know, enough for some people. And his wife filed for divorce. All of the medication he was taking began messing with his head. You know, it doesn't help. In fact, okay, now that we're close to the end of the podcast episode, I'm telling you right now, there has been a number of researches done, a number of physicians that looked into the medication that he had, and a lot of it counteracted each other. A lot of it messed with his head. It might have been that he was misdiagnosed, and it made it far worse. So that's the tragedy for me, is that, you know, his medicine also didn't help him, even though he was taking a lot of it and he thought it would help. But in the end, no, it made things worse. On April 9th, 1980, Curtis attempted to take his own life. He was unsuccessful, at least at first. It was the same way he tried to take his own life years ago when he was still just a teenager. He attempted to overdose on medication, and it didn't work. At this point, the band was about to tour in North America. However, because of the attempted suicide, Ian had to recover, and they had to cancel the tour. So that already put a strain on the band. And just 2 months later, Ian Curtis successfully committed suicide on May 18th, 1980, using a wash line. He hung himself in his house. He was alone. His wife, she tried to prevent him from making things worse. There was a night where she didn't want to leave because she thought her leaving would trigger a seizure and he would be on his own to deal with it. And whenever you deal with a seizure on your own, it's most likely fatal. It can be fatal, absolutely. However, that's not how he went out. Ian Curtis hung himself, and finally his suffering was over. However, his last album, Closer, I feel like it was a swan song of his. He recorded that. He had Love Will Tear Us Apart as one of the most piercing songs in the entire album. And the rest of the album, I've heard the entire thing. You can get a glimpse of his suffering. With the death of Ian Curtis came the death of Joy Division. However, here's the thing. The band continued. They changed their name, and the original members of Joy Division, aside from Ian Curtis, continued under a different name, New Order. They're going to get their own episode, okay? Because I'm well aware of the Joy Division story, what happened to Ian Curtis. It's just New Order, I'd have to research. Because again, remember, I was obsessed with Joy Division. I was a huge fan of their albums and their imagery, their sound, everything about it, right? I absolutely loved it. There was something poetic about the songs. And damn it, it hits different thinking about it. I'm thinking of one song in particular. It really strikes me differently, more than Love Will Tear Us Apart. New Dawn Fades. The lyrics. After learning everything, they speak numbers. I mean, just listen to the fucking, to the chorus. We'll share a drink and step outside, an angry voice and one who cried. We'll give you everything and more. This strain is too much, can't take much more. I've walked on water, run through fire, can't seem to feel it anymore. Come on, man. Like, with hindsight being 2020, can you not see it, you know, clicking? That's, damn. Seriously, New Dawn Fades, listen to that song and tell me that doesn't sound so heartbreaking, man. Oh, man. This one was a joy to record. This entire episode was, it was beautiful to record. Finally talking about my knowledge of Joy Division. The brief band that changed a lot. You know, really fucking rocked the industry. And New Order is definitely going to get their own episode. I just, I need to do more research in them because there's a whole saga basically after Ian Curtis. It's a whole lot. I'm not going to say saga. Like, they're not cartoon characters. Holy shit. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of the Meat Weed Podcast. We have a link tree in the description. We have Instagram in the description. And if you want to follow us, go ahead. We have a Patreon. If you want to donate, that's appreciated. I now have a new link. It's on my Instagram underneath the links. It's Buy Me a Coffee. If you don't want to subscribe to the Patreon, that's totally cool. You can give me $1 or $5 and that's it. I don't want any more. Seriously, that's it. Like, if you want to donate, that's an option. I do appreciate that. Also, I really appreciate XTatoX for buying another art piece. I'm actually really excited about that. Thank you so much. I love that someone is reaching out to me saying, hey, you're a great artist, you know, can you make me this? And I don't know, I really appreciate that. I do appreciate that my art's getting more attention. Thank you all very much for that, by the way. I also got a scanner recently to make really high quality prints. It's just, I need to know that there's going to be more like attention to it. You know, if I print out a bunch of stuff and no one buys it, it was a waste of money, right? So I just want a bit more attention on the accounts, on the art account, MG Acrylic, before I drop anything. But for now, the hard prints are still available to buy. That's going to do it for this episode. I will see you all next week. This was a joy to record, but granted, there were hard parts. I don't know if you can tell at the end. You know, that hit different for me. All right, see you guys next week.